welcome back to this week's episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast, sponsored as always by those rather lovely people at Natural Grower. Now, Natural Grower supply plant-based products for both organic and chemical-free gardening and your houseplants. They're absolutely crammed with certified organic growing power, and if you're looking for amazing results with all of your fruit and veg, your flower beds and houseplants, then Natural Grower's award-winning, certified, organic, peat-free compost and fertiliser are the very best you can buy. And your plants and gardens will love you for using it. All products are certified organic, they're 100% chemical-free and 100% peat-free. And those rather lovely people at Natural Grower have given me an exclusive 15% discount off all products for my listeners. Just pop MIC15 into the apply coupon field when you check out. Well, hello and welcome back to this episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast. Today, we head north of the border to beautiful Scotland to chat to MT O'Donnell. MT is a writer, gardener, editor, podcaster, and a lot more, as you will find out today in this delightful chat. MT is also the powerhouse behind Scotland Grows magazine, and indeed, the relatively new Scotland Grows podcast. So we've got a bit in common to chat about today. We'll talk about how Scotland Grows magazine came about, why it's so important for Scottish readers and those beyond, as well as discussing the challenges of gardening in Scotland. We also talk about Trellis, for which MT is a field worker. Now, Trellis is an incredible charity supporting over 500 groups who create green sanctuaries in hospitals, care homes, schools, prisons and community spaces. And amongst many other topics, we also touch upon MT's own garden and her own plant passions. So, without further ado, here's our chat. MT O'Donnell, welcome to the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast. It's lovely to have you here today.
Thank you so much, mate, for having me.
Oh, not at all. Publisher of Scotland Grows, editor, freelance gardening writer, podcast host, again, for Scotland Grows, gardening and business speaker, RCHS trustee, which we'll touch on later, and trellis field worker, again, which we'll touch on later. You're one busy lady.
I certainly am, Mike.
So if people ask you, what do you do for a living? What do you tell them?
Well, it's very hard to get to that elevator pitch, I think, when you work in the world of gardening and horticulture, because most of us have our fingers in lots of pies. So it's trying to refine it down. But I guess, yeah, the main thing I would say is that I'm an independent publisher of Scotland Grows magazine and host of the Scotland Grows show. Both platforms are designed to celebrate everything that's good in Scottish gardening.
So let's talk about Scotland Grows. How did that come about? How long has it been going? How long have you been the publisher editor of the magazine?
Scotland Grows magazine launched in August 2020. A little bit of a lockdown baby, like a lot of things were, I suppose, in our lives at that time. I had been doing a lot of freelance gardening writing, but during subsequent lockdowns, that kind of work, as you know yourself, dried up to some extent because a lot of companies, newspapers, magazines had staff on furlough at home, so they weren't paying freelancers. That combined with my passion that for years and years, Scotland wasn't being featured in mainstream media as much as I thought it deserved. Most of the mainstream garden media is brilliant, it's fantastic, but there is a slightly southern-centric bias, as we all know. Mm. And the weather and the growing conditions and the climate in Scotland are just so different from what it is in other parts of the country that sometimes it's hard for Scottish gardeners to get specific advice. And it's not quite as easy as, well, just add on 3 weeks. You know, if they tell you to plant in, you know, the beginning of March, just add on 3 weeks. And if you're in Scotland, don't plant until, you know, towards the end of March. It's not quite the same. So just wanting to get more specific advice for Scotland out compared with freelance work not being as fruitful during lockdown. Although it has to be said, I was busier than ever during lockdown because everybody wanted a quote from a gardener. And you'll know that. So TV, newspapers, radio stations, everyone wanted to get in touch and everyone wanted to find out what can we do now during lockdown to while away those hours? What can we do to get people in the garden? What can they do in their hour a day outside? And so I was never as busy, but I wanted to do something much more specific. So that's kind of where Scotland Grows came about.
So in terms of picking up on the Scotland thing, sort of like there's this, not intentional, but this marginalisation because, as you say, the climatic conditions. You have famously Beechgrove Garden, but what else do you have support-wise in terms of the written word aside from Scotland Grows?
Well, we don't really have very much else that's specifically just Scottish. So a lot of newspapers would perhaps carry a garden column, or magazines might, you know, give a little bit of page kind of worthiness to it. But I don't think it's deliberate in the mainstream garden media at all that the bias is southern centric. It's also just because a lot of the advice is generic. And as we're facing, you know, the effects of climate change, and we're all trying to mitigate against it, there's a much bigger emphasis now on looking at local climate. And even across the length and breadth of Scotland, it's not the same. So Scotland very often in mainstream media is treated as one entity, almost like one region, but we're not. North to south and east to west is just vastly, vastly different.
Now, I was, I guess, thinking west and east were going to be quite different because of the coastline, the prevailing weather coming in. But there is it's more than that, clearly.
It's north to south as well. So, yeah, no, you're completely right. West to east is quite different. The west coast of Scotland has some of the wettest and windiest areas of the UK. And the predominant wind comes from the southeast. So that comes over the Atlantic. That obviously on our coastal areas on the west would carry with it that wet sea air laden with salt. On the east coast, the wind comes off the North Sea, which is a colder wind. Mm. And that brings with it a lot of sea mists, which on the east coast we call the Har. So east to west, it's different. On the east, the climate is drier, slightly warmer, slightly sunnier in the summertime than the west. It affects the soil, it affects what we grow. But then north to south is completely different as well, because there's so much to unpick there. But the further north you go, obviously the wind speeds pick up. So some of our most northerly islands find it very difficult to grow trees because they pretty much end up horizontal. Yeah. So they have to, in the garden, think about shelter belts in a completely different way than just, you know, planting a shelter belt of trees. So that's different, but also daylight hours are completely different. So the further north you go, the more daylight hours there are in summertime, but then the less there are in wintertime. So it kind of affects, and that's just a generalization, but it affects overall what can be grown throughout the country. So it's not as easy as just treating Scotland like one entity, looking from the outside in, but even from the inside, it's just completely different. And we have a big island population. That itself brings with the challenges of island growing.
Well, because you then have the resources for gardening that need to get to those islands, and the cost implications of that, I guess, for those islanders who want to garden in those conditions are reliant upon having the materials to hand.
Exactly. And that's was one of the predominant drivers for Scotland Grows launching as a digital magazine, because people in our island communities and quite far north in the Highlands are quite often discriminated against because of their postcode. So there can be an extra delivery charge. People in the most northern islands, during times like this, where we're seeing storm event after storm event, they have to wait for the boats to come in sometimes to bring fresh vegetables, for example. So I wanted very much to avoid that postcode discrimination. So a digital magazine means that everyone across the length and breadth of the country and outside the country receives the information at exactly the same time. And you're not waiting for, oh, when's my magazine going to arrive? When's mine going to arrive? Everyone else has got theirs. When's mine? So that was a real driver in launching the digital magazine, just to ensure a bit more equality across the country.
So picking up on the magazine, what was your involvement with magazines prior to starting Scotland Grows? Had that been something that had been a career strand for you, or you had experience in?
Yeah, so my first degree was in so I had always been interested in writing and doing writing. I used to do lots of different freelance writing. Wrote for lots of magazines, both local, regional, national, gardening magazines, newspapers. Had a gardening column in Scotland on Sunday for a while, which featured our equivalent to the National Garden Scheme, which is Scotland's garden scheme. Works on the same premise where lots of people very, very kindly open their gardens for charity. So I wrote for Scotland on Sunday. I shared a column with Ray Cox, the garden photographer. And another gardening writer, Antoinette Cobraith, and we kind of went around Scotland and looked at beautiful gardens that were open to the public under Scotland's garden scheme, but also wonderful grand gardens, all shapes and sizes, and wrote about that. And that you'll know as well, Mike, getting the private tour when you're writing about someone's garden is just fabulous. It can be, and urban space, and you think, wow, no one's got much gardening space here. And then they take you around the side of the house or through the house, and it just opens up into something secret and amazing. And you get a private tour with the garden owner, and you get all the secrets of the garden and all their tips and how long they've been there and what they love to grow. And it really then gardening writing becomes easy because you're just reflecting their passion.
Yeah, and I think I've read somewhere when I was doing some research for our chat, you have established that are Scottish gardens generally larger than English gardens?
They are. So the median garden size across the UK, I think, was last, I think it's the 2021 census, it was 188 square metres. So in Scotland, we're at 226, so 226 square metres. But in London, that median garden size is 140 square metres. So in comparison, Scottish gardens on average are 38% bigger than those gardens in London. So we have a lot of garden.
You've got a lot of
We have a
garden,
lot of garden.
and then you've got a lot of conditions that can be quite challenging at times. Just before we move back to Scotland Grows, I just wondered, start and end of your season. Again, Scotland's a large place, but when does your season start? When would you expect last frost to have gone?
Some parts of our country, the late frost can be early June.
Early June, my goodness me.
I know. You're on there doing your Sunday strolls by then, like, wow. Look at what's going on in my garden, and we're running out with fleece.
And it's just sort of bringing this to the attention of everybody across the country, how these conditions vary from south to north, and even within Scotland, south to north, how that changes, as you've just been saying.
Yeah, the variation in temperature from the Scottish borders to the Northerly Islands obviously affects what can be grown. Overall, we would have a slightly shorter growing season, and that gets shorter the further north you go. But the daylight hours are longer the further north you go. So for some plants, that means they can catch up. So they have slightly less heat, but they have more daylight.
And I guess, as you say, less heat, it really is a very important case of right plant, right place, irrespective
Absolutely.
of where you live. But I guess you're probably more mindful of that where you are.
Yeah, and to kind of think about the fact that the growing season may be shorter, so therefore maybe more things have to be started indoors so they're ready to go out when the temperatures are warmed up and we're ready to go.
So, talking about the writing side of things that you've mentioned, I'm assuming you write not just for Scottish publications. So, if you're writing for English publications, are you then mindful of what your experience is in Scotland and then having to temper that to write for a Great British publication?
Well, it depends because sometimes I write for magazines and specifically about Scottish gardens. So therefore the focus then is just on the garden, and it might be then just to highlight particular plants which grow well in that garden because of that situation. And that can still have generic advice for everyone because, plants that grow on our east coast may also grow on the west or the east coast, all the way down through England. Plants that grow well on our west coast might be the same. So there are a lot, for example, Scotland Grows has a lot of readers from the north of England because they find a lot in common with the growing conditions in Scotland, or more in common, I should say, with the growing conditions in Scotland, maybe than further south. But that's not to say the advice in all the other gardening magazines isn't good. It just, for Scottish gardeners, we have to read with a mind to temper that advice. Depend on who I'm writing for and what I'm writing.
So Scotland Grows magazine, how often does that come out?
So that comes out every 2 months, so 6 times a year.
Right. And how many people are involved with this publication?
Pretty much it's just me, Mike. Yes, it's a passion project. I have a team of columnists who contribute to the magazine, and I've kind of flipped the magazine model on its head. So whereas a lot of gardening writers may not be gardeners, I mean, let's face it, if you're a good writer, you can write about anything. You could write about
Absolutely, yeah.
rocket fuel if that was the subject of that you needed to write about. So a good writer can write about anything. But I flipped the model on its head in that all my columnists are gardeners first. So some of them have not been writers previously or don't feel confident in their writing. But that's my job. So I said to them, my job as the editor is to make your words sound better. But
Right.
you're the gardener. So because I wanted this magazine to be specifically about gardening and growing in Scotland, all of my columnists live and work here. They don't have to be Scottish necessarily, but they have to be living here, growing here, so that what they write about is real. So they might be writing about growing strawberries on the East Coast, but they're writing about that lived experience of growing strawberries in those conditions. So they're all gardeners and growers first, writers second.
Yeah, it's a great way of thinking about it because that first-hand, dirty-hand knowledge of how
Yeah.
it actually is so important. And then for you to come along and work your magic as editor, that's a great way of looking at it.
Well, I feel like it means I can guarantee to my readers that what they're reading about are real lived experiences of gardening in Scotland. We're not just kind of making it up and or dulling down advice or tempering it to the Scottish climate. It's what's happening. And again, that's very different from different parts of the country.
So how big is your readership?
Well, the beauty of the digital magazine is great because you can drill down into all of those stats as well. So yeah, looking at readers, but then looking, we've got people who read the magazine regularly, we've got people who dip in and out of it, we've got a mailing list of people who don't read the magazine yet but receive the regular updates. And the beauty of Scotland Grows as well, and this is what we're finding, this is quite interesting. So I had a conversation with someone about this yesterday, is because of the digital magazine, our subscribers can get access to all of the back issues.
Yeah.
So on the last page of every issue, there's a kind of archives page with thumbnail copies. So at any time, you can go back and read a previous issue. You don't have to go searching for it. And what we're finding, and this was an interesting thing, that come this time of year, while people are waiting for the February issue to come out, they're going back and looking at last year's February issue or the February issue the year
Oh, yeah.
before, because the archives page on the last page make it easy for people to kind of go back and forwards between issues. So that's quite good. As an editor, it does make it harder to make sure we don't repeat copy.
Yeah, every editor's nightmare because I guess no matter what time of the season it is, it's snowdrops coming up. Everybody's going to be writing about snowdrops, and you want a different angle on that. You don't want to put something in that you've covered in a previous one. Yeah, a
Well,
difficult one.
it's gardening cyclical, isn't it? So it comes up every year, but I don't want to be writing about daffodils every single year in the same issue at the same time every year, and or always looking for a different angle on it. So it's trying to keep that record and trying to keep it fresh. So one year the focus might be on snowdrops in this issue, but the next year that focus might be on daffodils, or it might be on last year. Last year we didn't feature snowdrops at all. We chose to feature crocus as the main flower, or maybe that was the year before, who knows? Maybe last year it was Primula denticulata, whatever it was. So it's not, we're trying not to focus on the same thing every year because the digital issue allows people to constantly go back and reference it.
If you miss snowdrops this year, you'll have people say, "Where are the snowdrops this year?"
Yes, you didn't write about tulips this year or dahlias. Well, no, because we wrote about them last year. So, and it's possibly easier in print media to repeat things because you maybe don't have quite the same immediate access to it. So yeah, it's just another thing in a different format to be aware of.
So we have the magazine Scotland Grows. Not content with that, a podcast as well. So tell us about the podcast. How long's that been up and running? How's it going from one podcaster to another?
Well, and you were a great help, Mike, when I was trying to decide whether to launch the podcast or not. It was just good to have people around who have done it before and are supportive. That had been on my to-do list for a long time, as I'm sure it is for many people. Launching a podcast was probably last year the most challenging and the most rewarding thing I did for the whole year, all wrapped up in one. So it launched in April, and we Finished the year with 20 episodes out, so kind of running in series of six. It was the most challenging thing I ever did because, gosh, and again, you'll know this from being a podcaster and a writer, I'm so used to writing and editing text that editing audio was something brand new. It was like a whole new landscape, a whole new language to learn, a whole new lot of things to get your eyes scaly on a screen. So that I found challenging, huge learning curve, but did loads and loads of training, loads of learning about it. But it was also the most rewarding thing because it's the conversations you have with people. You yeah. just have. And the Scotland Grows show is predominantly like this, always has a guest on. It's not just me speaking. In fact, that's the great thing about editing. You can cut yourself out.
Yes.
So I've had wonderful guests. And again, they've all been Scottish gardeners, people who are growing in Scotland who can share some of their tips, share some of their favourite plants, share some of the things which they have found challenging and maybe offer some advice for it. People who've had some wonderful, great careers in Scotland. We've had a lot of the guys from Beechgrove on, as you mentioned earlier, by now. So yeah, it's just sharing those stories. So it's been hugely successful as a brand extension from the magazine because it means that readers of the magazine, so we would link to the podcast in all of the magazine issues. And again, because it's digital, it's one click straight through. So it's a great brand extension for readers because they can almost go off and find out more about the stories, more about the people.
Mm.
And it's also great for podcast listeners to say, oh, well, I was quite intrigued by that episode. Where can I find out more? Well, then you can link back to the magazine and find out more. I think it's just great for gardeners to hear from other gardeners. Well, you know that. But to hear from other gardeners and just to almost be inspired. And it's lovely to get the feedback that I'm sure you get as well when people say, oh, I've just listened to three episodes when I've been in my greenhouse and it was lovely. And that's lovely. And podcasting has become such a lovely thing to do and to be able to share with people. And I never take for granted the fact that we go directly into people's ears.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the conversation can't go off on a tangent and be talking about what we had for lunch. It has to be what we say on the tin it's going to be and do what it says it does. And I very much like the fact that people can take a gardening podcast with them out into the garden and they can, you know, just be inspired while they're gardening. Maybe not about the particular thing they're doing at that moment in time, but gardening away and thinking, oh, there's something I hadn't thought of doing before.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. So podcast, yeah, it was great and very, very successful and launched in April. And by the end of the year, we closed by being nominated by the Professional Publisher Association for Podcast of the Year. So the magazine was nominated as Independent Publisher of the Year, which was fabulous. But to get the podcast nominated as Podcast of the Year in launch year was just fab. So it was a lovely way to close the year.
Oh, congratulations. It's so rewarding to have whatever you do, whatever work, recognised by somebody else. And as you say, even if it's just your listeners saying, I've had you in the garden today, been listening to this episode, it's lovely to know that we're reaching out, sharing information. In terms of guests, you've mentioned you've had some of your Beechgrove presenters. Do you chase the sort of like the celebrity, or are you more looking to get people who are gardeners and to share their experience, or a mix of both?
A mix of both.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've had George Anderson on. I know you've had George on before as well. Brian Cunningham. I actually did a Christmas special with Jim McCall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you remember Jim as being the stalwart of Beechwood for nearly 50 years. And approaching 90 now, Jim doesn't do very much public work, but he'd agreed to be in the podcast. So I drove to Aberdeen and met him in his local garden centre, which was his choice because he wanted, you know, them to be featured in it. And it was just, wonderful. It was just a lovely chat. And what the feedback has come from that podcast is that people who have been not just big Beechgrove fans, but big fans of Jim McCall, because he did so much, not just in Scotland, he worked south of the border as well, just to promote horticulture and gardening to regular gardeners. People just loved hearing his voice again. And it was really lovely. So yeah, I've had lots of those guys on. I've had quite a few guests from the National Trust for Scotland on. So those are the head gardeners or the gardeners who may be in charge of designated areas, kind of the area managers or the gardens and landscape managers. And that's been lovely because they have quite an overview of different large gardens across Scotland which are open to the public and the challenges of managing a garden. I can imagine this morning they are running about like headless chickens after the latest storm event,
Yeah.
checking the health of trees and being able to make sure things can be open to the public again and the safety there. Also had on people who've written gardening books, some Scottish writers have written gardening books, and having regular gardeners on who just maybe have been gardening for a long time have a lot to give back to people and who want to just
Yeah.
talk about their experience. So yeah, lovely, a lovely mix of people. We actually received via a guest a lovely email towards the end of the year as well from a listener in Canada. And
Okay.
that's been one of the surprises of the podcast, that at the last count we were being listened to. So the Scotland Grows show, which predominantly is for a Scottish gardening audience, that would be the target audience, is being listened to in 48 countries around the world. And
Yeah.
it's just great. But this lady in Canada got in touch via one of the guests to say that she had really, really enjoyed listening to the podcast. And one of the reasons was because she'd loved listening to the chat between two people with Scottish accents, because it reminded her of her mum who had emigrated from Scotland. And it was like overhearing a conversation between her mum and her friends with the
Yeah.
act with so how much of the gardening she listened to, but she quite liked listening to the accents. And yet we don't think we have an accent that's,
Yeah, I've had the same. I've had people who've moved away from the country who listen in because they like their garden. Maybe they're not gardening now, but just to hear the accent and just to hear two people chatting about gardening. And like you, I've spoken to a number of head gardeners in the last series. Just so much information, and as passionate gardeners, it's just I have a genuine interest in finding out about what their job is, what the challenges are, how they do this, that, and the other. And the listenership to find out where people are listening. I'm not too hung up on the numbers, but to see that there are people listening all over the world whilst I record this in my front office is bizarre.
I like data. I like drilling down into data and like that too. Just to see that there are people listening all over the world, reading the magazine, but listening to podcasts all over the world. It's lovely. And that's what technology does for us, isn't it? We can, after this, now go on and listen to a podcast coming from Australia or New Zealand or Canada or Uruguay or wherever. And it's lovely to have that interconnectedness.
Absolutely. We're very lucky to do this, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And I'm very glad that I started podcasting last year. And I'm very glad that I was encouraged by people like yourself and Geoff, who was great as well.
Yeah.
Just go on and do it. And yeah, now I feel good about doing it. Now I enjoy doing it. I don't worry so much about the tech, because I think that's a big worry for everyone when we start anything new, isn't it? Is will the tech let us down? But I really enjoy the conversations with
Yeah.
people, finding out more about their loves and likes and their gardening. And ultimately it kind of expands the network then, because you get to know someone else a little bit better, and it means you can then put them in touch with someone else, or I can refer readers or listeners to, well, if you listen to that podcast episode, they talked about, to where a guest on her talked about reducing plastic use in the garden, for example. So I can refer people to that episode and say, well, if you're looking to do that, just listen to that one, and you'll get some tips there. And I'm not selling them anything,
No.
which is a good
No.
thing about podcasting. I'm not selling anything. I'm just saying, if you listen in, there's some really great conversations, great advice, and hopefully something that you'll find inspirational for your own space.
Oh, well, good luck with the podcast. Hope it goes from strength to strength, as goes to Scotland Grows magazine as well. Changing the subject, much publicised these days and needing discussions is gardening and well-being, physical, emotional, and mental health. What are your experiences of working in this area? And I guess I'm hoping we can talk about your job as a trellis field worker.
Yeah, so I was always interested in the benefits that gardening and plants can bring to our general well-being, whether that's physical, mental, emotional. So I did some work with trellis, did some training with Thrive, and then I have gone on and yes, I do some field work with trellis. And trellis is the equivalent organisation to Thrive in Scotland, although the two organisations are working really closely last year and this year, and they're trying to bring some training together, which will be certified training.
So am I right in saying Trellis is Scotland's network for therapeutic gardening?
Yeah, that's it. And Trellis would work with people in various situations, like in care homes, in schools, in prisons, in secure units, to bring gardening to people who could just use it to help their general sense of well-being. So when I work with Trellis, generally my role would be to train the trainer, if you like. So if I were to go along to a care home, it wouldn't necessarily be to deliver the class for the residents, but it would be to sit with the trainer and help them with their planning and with their resource management and their time management, and maybe look at the residents they have and how they want to use gardening in a way that will help them. Maybe to explain a bit more about the benefits that gardening could bring, suggest activities, do demonstrations for them. And that may, in fact, then lead to me doing a class with residents, but with the trainer there to look at what's possible. And sometimes in those situations, it's generally tabletop gardening for people maybe with limited mobility issues. But I quite a lot get sent to the schools. So I was a high school teacher in my former career. So I quite often get sent to the high schools, which I love because I get back into to high school, and it's then looking at how can we get children at high school age into gardening, or just into getting them outside the garden while we're fighting against all the wonders of their modern world, but also without adding something to an already overburdened curriculum, which can't fit gardening in anywhere. So instead of trying to fit it in its own unique space, what things can we bring outside into the garden and use the garden to help with? So the garden, in some ways, we're trying to make it fit in with the curriculum, but it's trying to expand the benefits for those young people and just getting them outside and getting them interested, not even as a career, but just hopefully as a lifelong hobby. And my big bugbear is always, oh, why children don't know, and I mean my generation as well, why we don't know where our food comes from. When we're at school, why are we not taught how to grow our own food? And I always, in schools, I always give this analogy to the children. I always say, can you imagine, because you all watch sci-fi movies and things, can you imagine if someone from a different planet landed on this planet, had a good scout about, took us in, and went back to their planet and then said, they have no idea how to grow their own food. They have no idea how to feed themselves down there. They just don't know. So if we want to attack that planet, all we need to do is take away the food supplies because they don't know how to do it themselves.
It's scary. I think we've all heard the horror stories of youngsters being asked where potatoes come from, and they'll say the supermarket. And so many don't know that they come from the ground. And to change that, like you say, it's just such a big mind shift for some. And as you say, the curriculum is packed. How do you fit gardening in? It might not be a career, but it'd be lovely just to show children where food comes from, so they have that awareness growing up.
Yeah, it's a life skill, isn't it? And it's a life skill that not only is practical because it teaches you how to grow something that you can eat. And we're not talking about making everyone self-sustaining, because that particular moment that won't be possible. But to give people the knowledge that they can grow something, that in itself is practical. But the joy that comes from that, which then enhances your overall sense of well-being, is just immense, isn't it? It's all gardeners know. It's the joy of sowing a seed and then it sprouts into a seedling, and you're literally like, wow, I did that. I did that. Even though you didn't really have that much to do with it, but you can take the credit to starting it off.
It's a magical process for a young child to see a seed grow into a seedling, into a plant, and for them to be able to take food from that plant to eat. It's just instilling that magic at an early age, so they have at least an awareness, and then who knows, maybe later in life they might then find their way into gardening and horticulture.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
Gardening then. Tell us about, how much time do you have for your own garden? Do you have, tell us about your garden.
Gosh, I love my garden, and that's the worst question you can ever ask anyone who works in, isn't it, in horticulture, gardening media. How much time do you get in your
The
own?
best question.
How much time do you get in your own garden? And we all go, oh, not enough. No, not so the answer is not enough, but I do try and make time in the garden because I know what it does for my mental well-being as well. If I have, as we all know, if I have a problem to work through, I'm just not feeling great, if I'm sometimes stuck for creativity for writing, or if I've got a guest coming up or an interview, just getting that time out in the garden, it frees your mind of all the nonsense. It takes away the distractions. It quietens the mental chatter so that you can almost start to focus on the one thing that's going on in your mind that you need to focus on. And I absolutely love it. I mean, it's probably not good these days to say, I love digging. I'll just whisper that in case Charles Dowling is listening. But it's the process of that, just getting the spade in the soil, turning it, that I just love being in the garden. So whether it's all of the things that go with it, like planting or deadheading or whatever, I just love the process of being in the garden. And I actually like weeding. And I think I like weeding. And that's not fashionable to say that, isn't it? Not. I think I like it because I do it on my hands and knees. So I like that contact with the ground and the soil. I just like being on my hands and knees, getting literally up close and personal with the plants. You know, pulling out weeds, but seeing what else is going on when you're down there. I've actually started talking to my plants. It's really.
I'm with you completely on that one. You're pushing on an open door. I love weeding for the very same reasons. It just gives you time to get up close and personal with your plants, to see what's going on. And it's mind in neutral. And it's just nice. You can think about something like a podcast or some writing or whatever's going on in your life. I love weeding. So I'm happy to say that loud and proud. Plants in your garden. Am I right in thinking you're sort of like a bluey, purpley sort of girl?
Oh, I am. You have done your research. Love, love, love those colours in my garden. And I started when I started planting up a lot of ornamentals in this garden. I thought, well, we'll go for a lovely kind of cycle of colours. We'll start with whites and pinks, and we'll go into blues and purples, and we'll finish the year with a blast of red, which worked for a couple of years. And then plants, as we know, find their own way, find their own, you know, space in the garden of what they like, and some of them decide to bloom a little bit early or bloom a little bit late. So now it's a wee bit of a mix. But generally on that kind of colour scheme, the blues and the purples and the whites moving into the reds. Yeah, I just absolutely love it. I've got a lot of evergreen structure in the garden, and that comes from, I guess, rhododendrons, choicias, viburnums. I have got conifers, the dreaded conifers in the garden, which I actually planted.
Gosh,
So, yes.
which conifers have you planted? Now I'm very open-minded about conifers because some conifers are stunning, but I think we gardeners tend to just go straight to Leylandii and think, oh, goodness me.
Yeah, I have got a couple of Leylandii actually, and that predominantly was to block out a neighbouring house and to try and act as a bit of a windbreak.
Which we talked
And
about. Yeah.
I needed them to be fast growing to block out said neighbour for various reasons, which we won't go into. So I deliberately chose the thing that people don't want to plant for the reasons that people want to get rid of them. I wanted something that was fast growing, that would cover a vast space quite quickly, and I knew it would act as a windbreak as well. But the other benefit for me is then I don't cut them all year, but I do trim them so they don't come go out of control. But I cut them then about Christmas time because I often do wreath making workshops. So then I can cut all the foliage generally from my own garden. So I use it, cut it then, and also have it draped over mantelpieces and hanging from lights and all over the place. So yeah, you keep them in trim that way and use a lot of the evergreens in my garden for winter foliage and winter interest. So you have a lot of evergreens in the garden, a lot of herbaceous perennials. Tried to move away a couple of years ago from bedding plants and have a lot more herbaceous plants in the garden. Love hardy geraniums. Love, 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 particularly all the purple varieties.
Any particular standout geranium for you?
No, I really just like them all. I've got so many different varieties. I really just like them all. The thing I like about hardy geraniums most is that they then cover the dying foliage of the snowdrops and the daffodils and the tulips to some extent as well. So they're planted in that kind of way so that they'll come up and they'll cover it. So the geraniums, Hostas, pretty big on hostas, so the slugs, mind you, but we've come to a mutual agreement. They leave them alone for the first half of the year, then I let them munch away for the second half, and we've had a talk and it works quite well.
Notice that you liked hostas. I'm a hosta lover too. I think hostas was my first plant love, but for the reason of the menacing mollusks, I left them, but I've now come back to them, but they're all in pots. So yeah, another hosta lover here.
Yeah, hostas, hydrangeas. I mean, hydrangeas do really well here as well. Lots of hydrangeas. And I've got hydrangeas in pots, which I didn't think would work quite so well. But obviously, they love the, I've got really heavy clay soil. So the hydrangeas love the moisture in the soil. So I thought, oh, putting them in pots makes them dependent on me.
Yeah.
However, they actually have thrived in pots. So some of the hydrangeas that maybe weren't doing so well, pop them into pots, grow them on for a couple of years, and then maybe move them back into the garden if there's hydrangea that's not doing too well there. Quite a bit of New Zealand flax actually I planted a couple of years ago, some big phormiums, because a lot of New Zealand plants do well in Scotland, where bizarrely enough, we've kind of got some of the same growing conditions, and they have just taken off and done fantastically well. So they actually provide a lot of interest. As do Phytinas, because they're lovely and they're great again for some winter foliage. And I do a lot of growing as well of produce. So I grow my own tatties. There's nothing better than growing your own potatoes. So I'm a big potato and cabbage grower. Absolutely love.
You grow apples as well, I think, don't you?
Yes, got a couple of apple trees as well. So my apple, I've planted apple trees because of the, not just for the apples, but because of the historic association with Scotland. So in the 19th century, Scotland was known for its apple growing. And over the centuries, Scotland's produced 40 varieties of Scottish apple. So yeah, I planted a couple of apple trees. Never had a great crop off them, but you know, they're maybe only in 10 years or something. I'm prepared to wait. I'm quite happy to wait. So I've got apples, strawberries, autumn fruiting raspberries. So that the strawberries and raspberries don't come at the same time, because our strawberries would be end of June before we're looking at them. And I don't want strawberries and raspberries at the same time, because there's only so many pieces of fruit a girl can pop in her glass of fizz. So I need to spread that joy over the year. Gooseberries, what else? Let's say potatoes, cabbage, carrots, parsnips.
Need to talk about that cabbage.
Oh, that's cabbage, yes.
If anybody pops over to MT's social media, her Instagram account, there is one ginormous cabbage.
There is, and that was an award-winning cabbage, Mike. You know,
Award-winning, yes.
I think I should have hung my growing boots up after that cabbage, because I don't think I've ever grown one quite as big as that again. That was seed that I got from Donegal in Ireland, Gortahork seed, and that was sent over to me by my sister-in-law to try, because she had been growing them very well on the very west coast of Donegal, and they had survived and were great. So, given the similar kind of climate with just wet, heavy clay soil, she said they'll grow well for you. Oh my goodness. And they did. And I mean, absolutely huge. It was a beast to get out of the ground to take along to the flower show that year. But the amount of eating we got of those cabbages were just great, because it was just pick a leaf and the whole leaf would do a family of four for dinner. It was absolutely huge. I still do get that Gortahork seed, but have never, and get good crops off them, but possibly have never had the cabbages grow quite as big. So whatever was going on that year, maybe it was, you know, growing produce has a lot to do with the weather. Maybe it was just the weather that year that made the biggest boost. I don't tend to do anything at all with edible crops, like feeding or giving them any mollycoddling, the same as all the ornamentals and the evergreens and the herbaceous. Everything in the garden has to fend for itself. I'm quite tough like that. I don't have time to mollycoddle things that don't want to grow here. And I know that the growing conditions here are not ideal for things. So, for example, I just don't grow delphiniums. They are beautiful. They're a show garden staple. They're absolutely gorgeous. They just don't want to grow in my garden. They're either completely attacked by slugs, or they're battered by the wind, or they just don't like the heavy clay soil. So it's back to what you said earlier, right plant, right place. It's knowing your own soil type, knowing your own aspect in terms of sun and shade, knowing your soil, and almost biting the bullet sometimes and saying, no matter how many years I try and grow this, this is not going to grow for me. So therefore, finding something which will replace it and give you the same joy and fill the same space. And if it's a cut flower you want, or if it's a perennial you want, find something equivalent that will do good for you in that space.
Amen to that. I've tried so many plants that just don't like it here. You just have to get to the point where it's like, leave it, walk away, try something else.
Yeah. So I know the things that grow well in my space, and that doesn't mean they grow well in everyone else's space.
Yeah.
But we can all talk from experience of, well, this is how I grow this, and this might be the general advice for this. But actually, you know, and I'm a wee bit of an experimental gardener, I would say, in that way. If I know that something grows really well in sun, then I want to try it in shade and vice versa. So something like stilbies, I've got stilbies all over the garden. They grow, I've tried them in all sorts of different situations, in drier areas, wetter areas, sunny areas, but, you know, and it's just seeing where they perform best. But will they still perform in areas that they don't like? And they pretty much do here, even difference between sun and shade in terms of aspects of the garden. They do, but they know what they like and I know what they like, but I can still get them to fill. They're another great doer for filling a space, aren't they?
Yeah, it's good to experiment. I've done exactly the same. Put plants in situations which, according to the books, which they don't read, they shouldn't be. Then they thrive. So it's just knowing your space, knowing your soil, giving things a go.
Sorry, I was going to say back to you. You asked about the purples and that. Probably lupins are one of my faves as well, up there with hostas. And I just love those spires, those jelly bean flowers, and the deep, deep purples that you get. So, yeah. So I like to have something to look at all winter. I like to have stuff to eat when it's in season. But I like to have colour punctuated throughout. And I like those purples in the summer pulling everything together.
That's not too much to ask.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I'm conscious time has run away. Before we go, what's next for you? You talked about you'd like to the challenge of the podcast. Anything else on your professional bucket list that you'd like to get in there?
Well, I just reached for my 45-page to-do list. I think in terms of for the magazine, it's just continuing to increase our subscriber base and getting the message out to people that you don't have to live in Scotland to read Scotland Rose. The information might, you know, be very relevant for your garden, your situation. For the podcast, it's working this year, again, growing that audience base, but also you've probably nailed it by now, Mike, working on the consistency and not rushing at the last minute to think, I want to get an episode out next week. So it's what, and the next series, four guests have already been interviewed. So yeah, it's working on now that it's launched and it's doing really, really, really well in terms of downloads and user retention. It's yeah, working on perfecting the system of the podcast rather than the output. I don't have any shortage of guests. I've literally got people clamoring to get on, and that's amazing. Like so many wonderful, wonderful people to talk to this year. So yeah, it's just getting the system for that better. I'm also involved with the lovely people at Schoon Palace to help and support the Schoon Palace Garden Fair. So that came to market 2 years ago. So I'm involved with helping them build on that as well. Lots of things going on with Trellis, as I say, as they start to work with Thrive more on professional qualifications. And as you mentioned at the top, I'm involved with the CALI as well. So that's the Royal Caledonian Horticulture Society, or RHS equivalent, if you like. And the
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I did actually look up now, where have I got my notes there? Yeah, the RCHS, I was hoping that it wasn't the Railway and Canal Historical Society, but
not yet.
Horticultural Society.
Yeah, so they're very long running organisation, and I'm on the board with the CALI. They've got lots of big plans for this year to push themselves forward and do lots of things. So yeah, it's just great to be involved with all of these different organisations who on the surface may do different things, but it's horticulture and gardening that runs through the heart of them all, and they're all doing their best to help people garden more for their health, for their well-being, for their benefit. Just looking at supporting people who are growing produce or growing plants, just getting people outside and getting us all back to nature, and something which is really enjoyable. So I love the gardening community is smaller obviously in Scotland, but I love the connectedness of it that it's quite easy to connect with other people in the industry who are doing fabulous things, not just in Scotland, out with Scotland as well. But I feel that I'm in quite a pivotal position to connect. Just through Scotland Rose, it's given me, quite a pivotal position to connect people who I know are working in this area with someone who's working in this area or someone who needs advice on this. So that's the kind of thing I love doing, being able to connect people and be involved in all sorts of things. Things that get me away from my desk as well.
If any of my listeners want to learn more about Scotland Grows, where do they head to?
Everywhere and anywhere, hopefully. So across all the socials at Scotland Grows, that's Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can literally just go online to scotlandgrowsmagazine.com to find out any more information about the magazine. There's
Okay.
a website that goes with the magazine, which is uploaded with two new posts every week. So lots and lots and lots of gardening information on there, growing information, everything that's going on.
And if people want to learn more about UMT, where do they head to?
We can connect with me on LinkedIn, just at MT O'Donnell, and I have my own Instagram account at the Pink Wheelbarrow, which I'm sometimes woefully bad at keeping up because I'm doing everything else with Scotland Grows. But I do, as we come into the spring and the summer, start to post a lot. You'll see my Primula denticulatas every second day in springtime because I love those little pops of colour. They just,
You
it
and I
just,
both.
oh, it's just at a time where the garden is barren and it looks like there's nothing out there. And suddenly from the window, you think,
All there.
and I love the fact that they come into flower and then they get taller. It's
I
just
know.
what it's a bit like, here I am, now watch me grow. It's lovely. And they're great cell seeders, great spreaders, great plant to lift and divide, great for early colour. What's not to like?
Exactly. Agree completely. MT, it's been a delight to have you on the podcast. Thank you for setting time aside from your very busy schedule, and good luck with everything, and speak very soon.
Mike, thanks very much for having me on, and I hope to catch up with you again soon.
Well, there goes one very busy lady, and irrespective of whether you're living in Scotland or not, Scotland Grows magazine and Scotland Grows podcast contain a wealth of really helpful and knowledgeable gardening information. As always, I'd like to thank MT for taking time out of her schedule to come and chat to us today. And I look forward to joining you next time around when we'll have another great gardening guest. And as for me, well, I'm heading out into my own garden now. And if you want to see my own garden, why not head over to my Instagram account where you'll find me as Mike_thegardener. Happy gardening all. See you soon. Bye bye for now. Bye bye.